Welcome to this deep dive. Today we are taking you, deep into the hidden atomic world of steelmaking.
Yeah, we really are. And we've got quite the stack of sources today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're looking at some incredibly dense metallurgical research here. We are talking transformation kinetics, multi-component diffusion modeling, crystallography, the works.
It's heavy stuff for sure.
It is, but our mission today is to uncover something that is just wildly fascinating. We are going to see how adding just a microscopic pinch of, a pretty obscure element completely rewrites the physical rules of steel.
Right, and it's that microscopic change that makes modern mega infrastructure possible.
Exactly. So to start off, I want to take you to Araxá, Brazil. Deep in Brazil, there is this massive open pit mine sitting on a staggering 500-year supply of an element you have probably never heard of.
Niobium.
Niobium, yeah. And the journey this stuff takes is just wild.
It really is a remarkable journey from that open pit mine to, the skyline of a modern city. I mean, when you look at the sheer scale of the mining operation in Araxá, they are moving literal mountains of a rock called pyrochlore ore.
Right, but they aren't getting much out of it at first, are they?
No, that's what is so striking, the yield. At this initial stage, that raw pyrochlore ore contains only about 3% niobium oxide.
Wow, so it's mostly dirt.
Yeah, you are looking at 97% waste rock. So before it gets anywhere near a steel mill, they have to take this raw ore and put it through a really rigorous, massive scale enrichment process.
That's the flotation process, right?
Exactly, flocation. And they do that just to concentrate that tiny 3% into something usable.
Which makes sense because you can't just, throw raw, dusty rock into a vat of highly controlled molten steel.
No, definitely not.
You have to isolate the active ingredient.
Precisely. And that isolation is intense. After they use flotation to enrich it, they react the concentrated ore with aluminum.
Okay, why aluminum?
The aluminum acts as a getter. It's essentially a chemical sponge that violently strips the oxygen away from the niobium.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's intense.
Yeah.
And then if they want perfectly pure niobium, they blast it inside these massive electron beam furnaces.
That sounds like sci-fi.
It kind of is. But for our story, and well, for the vast majority of global infrastructure, the most important product isn't actually the pure metal.
Right, it's the alloy.
Yeah, an alloy of iron and niobium known as ferroniobium. That is the material that gets packed up, shipped to steelmakers around the world, and becomes the real star of our metallurgical story today.
Okay, let's unpack this because we are moving from the dusty, heavy machinery world of Brazil right into the intense, glowing hot mixing pot of modern steelmaking.
We are, yeah.
And the core focus of the sources we are looking at is this category called microalloyed steels.
Yes.
And I just love this concept because the scale is almost impossible to wrap your head around. I mean, think of niobium like a metallurgical seasoning.
That's a great way to put it.
Great. Like if you are making a massive cauldron of soup, you don't pour in a whole cup of salt. You add a tiny pinch to radically change the flavor profile.
Exactly.
And in steelmaking, they are adding something like 0.05% or maybe 0.095% by weight of this ferroniobium.
It is a microscopic fraction of the total batch.
Literally a fraction of a percent. Yet that tiny pinch fundamentally dictates the physical strength of the steel. How can such an incredibly small amount of material do so much heavy lifting?
What's fascinating here is that niobium has a dual identity inside the steel.
A dual identity.
Yeah, it doesn't just do one thing. Its behavior is entirely dictated by its state of matter and how it interacts with the iron atoms as the steel cools down from a molten liquid into a solid.
Okay, so it changes as it cools.
Right. To really understand its power, you have to realize that niobium acts completely differently depending on whether it is fully dissolved into the hot steel.
Which is called being in solid solution, right?
Yeah. Yes, solid solution. So it acts one way when it's dissolved, and a completely different way if it has clumped together with carbon and nitrogen to form tiny solid chunks.
And those solid chunks are the precipitates.
Exactly, specifically niobium carbonitrides.
So it has this dual identity. It is either a dissolved liquid ghost sort of floating through the metal, or it is a hard, solid clump.
That's exactly it.
So to really get a grip on this, let's look at that first identity. What happens when the niobium is entirely dissolved in the hot steel?
Well, first we have to define that hot state. The research papers refer to this hot, high-temperature phase of steel as austenite.
Austenite. Got it. So we have this hot, malleable austenite, and it is beginning to cool down. What is the niobium doing?
As that hot austenite cools, the iron atoms, They naturally want to rearrange themselves. They want to transform into a softer, naturally occurring room temperature crystal structure.
And that's called allotriomorphic ferrite.
Yes, but the research papers, particularly these rigorous studies by Jan and Padesha,
The ones focusing on the high-strength line pipe steel.
that's the one. Their research reveals that when niobium is dissolved in that hot austenite, it severely delays the steel from transforming into that soft ferrite.
It just stops it.
It does.
I
And the
know.
potency is just staggering. Just 0.05% of dissolved niobium is as effective at delaying this transformation as adding a full 1% of manganese.
That is insane.
It is. It essentially traps the steel, giving it incredible, what we call hardenability.
I want to translate the mechanism here because the way the papers describe it is just so vivid.
Oh, it really is.
Imagine the boundaries between the grains of hot austenite as prime vacant real estate.
Okay, yeah.
This is exactly where the new softer ferrite wants to start building its houses.
Yeah.
It wants to nucleate on those boundaries. But that soluble dissolved niobium segregates itself directly to these grain boundaries.
Right.
So it basically acts like a squad of heavy-duty bouncers standing at the gates of this real estate.
That's exactly it. And they don't even have to throw a punch to stop the ferrite from building. Yeah, just by standing there, these niobium atoms alter the local physics of the boundary. They lower what we call the grain boundary energy.
And the papers actually quantify this, right?
They do. They found that these bouncers lower the energy by 0.076 joules per square meter for every weight percent of niobium added.
Wait, I need to pause there.
Sure.
Why does lowering the energy ruin the real estate? I mean, in my mind, lower energy sounds more stable, which sounds like a good place to build a microscopic house.
It's a great observation, but, well, nature is inherently lazy.
Lazy.
Yeah, in metallurgy, transformations happen because the system wants to relieve stress. High-energy boundaries are unstable and stressed,
Oh, I see.
which makes them perfect active locations to kickstart a structural change, to nucleate new ferrite.
So the stress is what causes the building.
Exactly. So when the niobium bouncers lower that energy by 0.076 joules per square meter, they relax the boundary. They make it too comfortable, energetically speaking.
So the driving force to transform just disappears.
Yes. The real estate becomes energetically useless. And the ferrite just can't get a foothold to start growing.
That makes perfect sense. They take away the energetic motivation to change.
And you hit on exactly why this specific piece of research by Jan and Vedacia is so crucial to the scientific community.
Because it's settled a debate,
A
right?
huge debate. For years, metallurgists argued fiercely over exactly how niobium achieved this massive delay in ferrite formation.
What were the other theories?
Well, some scientists argued it was a solute drag effect, suggesting the niobium atoms were physically dragging on the moving transformation interface, you know, acting like friction.
Okay, that sounds plausible.
It does. And others hypothesized that niobium somehow chemically stopped carbon from diffusing. But this research definitively proved that it is this specific, measurable reduction in austenite grain boundary energy that creates the hardenability.
They prove the bouncers are just making the real estate energetically unfavorable.
Exactly. It settled a massive debate.
It is wild that scientists can calculate the energy of microscopic grain boundaries down to fractions of a joule just to settle an argument.
That's pretty amazing precision.
So we've basically locked the steel in this hot state. The bouncers have stopped the soft ferrite from forming, but the steel is still cooling down. It has to transform into something.
Right. It can't stay austenite forever.
And this is where we see niobium change its identity, right? What happens when it decides to stop being a dissolved ghost and clump together to form those solid precipitates, the niobium carbonitrides?
This is where we have to look really closely at the internal crystallography of the steel.
Okay.
When niobium and carbon bond together to form a solid precipitate, they create a very specific geometric structure called a cubic afflatus.
A cubic afflatus.
Yeah. Imagine a microscopic cube where niobium atoms sit at the corners and the centers of the faces, and the much smaller carbon atoms nestle into the empty spaces in between.
So they have to interlock perfectly.
Exactly. But to form this solid crystal in the real world, both the niobium atoms and the carbon atoms have to physically travel through the solid cooling matrix of the steel to meet up at the exact same location.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because when you read the sources, you spot a massive physical problem with this meetup.
Oh yeah, a huge problem.
Carbon atoms are tiny. Because they are so small, they move through the spaces between the iron atoms, the steel lattice, incredibly fast.
Right, they just zip right through.
But niobium atoms are massive substitutional atoms. They are huge and sluggish, and they have to force iron atoms out of the way just to move.
It's a completely different scale of movement.
It is basically like setting up a three-legged race between an Olympic sprinter, the carbon, and a toddler, the niobium.
That is a perfect analogy.
If they have to tie their legs together to form this cubic F crystal at a specific location, how on earth do they coordinate? Why doesn't the carbon just speed right past the niobium?
It completely stumped early models of binary diffusion. I mean, if you only look at one element's natural speed, it makes no physical sense. The carbon should just run away.
Right.
But the researchers of Fujita and Fudeshia, they solved this by applying the complex thermodynamics of multi-component diffusion.
Multi-component diffusion. Okay, what does that actually mean for our sprinter and toddler?
Because the system must maintain a local equilibrium at the interface where the new crystal is growing. The thermodynamic rules essentially force a compromise between the fast atom and the slow atom.
Hold on, you lost me a bit there. How do thermodynamic rules force a sprinter to slow down? What is physically happening to the carbon?
Think of atomic diffusion like a ball rolling down a steep hill. The steepness of that hill is the concentration gradient. Atoms naturally want to move from an area of high concentration to low concentration.
Okay, follow.
What multi-component diffusion modeling shows is that the system mathematically flattens the concentration gradient of the carbon in the surrounding steel.
It flattens the hill.
It essentially levels the hill. So, in your analogy, the laws of thermodynamics remove the slope, forcing the Olympic sprinter to slow down to a walking pace.
Wow.
Yeah, the carbon flux is aggressively reduced to a level consistent with the slow, sluggish movement of the niobium toddler. They maintain equilibrium by throttling the fast element so the crystal can successfully build itself.
That is incredible. The system intentionally flattens the thermodynamic hill just so the massive atom can keep up and they can build the crystal together.
It is a brilliant mechanism.
Yeah.
And, you know, once those tiny cubic F crystals form, the physics don't stop there.
Really? Well, what happens next?
The multi-component diffusion model also introduces us to a brutal phenomenon called the capillarity effect.
Capillarity effect? That sounds intense.
It is. Because we aren't just forming one single crystal, right?
Yeah.
Billions of these tiny solid niobium chunks are forming at different times, which means they're all slightly different sizes.
Okay, lots of different size chunks.
The capillarity effect dictates that the chemical equilibrium of the surrounding matrix actually changes based on the curvature, which really just means the size of the particle.
So size actually dictates the atomic rules here.
Yes, and it comes down to surface energy again. A tiny particle has a massive amount of highly curved surface area relative to its internal volume.
Right, a lot of surface for a tiny bit of mass.
Exactly. And that tight curvature stretches the atomic bonds, making the tiny particle highly unstable and energetically uncomfortable.
And as we established earlier, nature hates high energy.
It absolutely hates it.
Yeah.
So to reach a lower, more comfortable energy state, the system essentially dissolves these stressed tiny particles and feeds their atoms through the steel to the larger, flatter particles.
Wait. It feeds them?
Yeah, it's a thermodynamic wealth transfer.
Wow, so it is a microscopic, cannibalistic free-for-all.
Pretty much, yeah.
The large niobium particles continue to grow by literally eating the smaller ones. As the large ones pull atoms from the matrix, the smaller ones dissolve back into the steel to replenish the supply, and the entire structure just coarsens over time.
Exactly. Only the largest, most stable precipitates survive the cooling process.
Okay, let's step back and look at where we are.
Good idea.
We have established this dual identity. We know how the dissolved liquid ghost niobium acts as a bouncer, lowering grain boundary energy to stop the soft ferrite.
Right.
And we know how the solid clump niobium forms through this wild three-legged race of multi-component diffusion and how it survives the cannibalistic capillarity effect.
Yes, we've covered the life cycle.
But there's a massive twist in the research when we look at the final structure of the steel. What happens when these surviving solid niobium particles interact with a totally different steel structure known as bainite?
This is where the story gets really nuanced and, honestly, where the engineering becomes an art form. We know that as the steel cools, because the ferrite was blocked by the bouncers, the steel will instead transform into a structure called bainite at slightly lower temperatures.
And bainite is a good thing.
Right? Oh, very good. Bainite is an ultra-tough, highly desirable engineered state. But according to the research by Rees and his colleagues, there is a fascinating shift in niobium's role here.
A shift?
Yeah. While dissolved niobium stops ferrite from forming, if the steel goes through a holding period where those solid niobium precipitates have time to form and coarsen, those solid particles actually accelerate the formation of bainite.
Okay, wait a second. I am going to push back hard here.
Oh, right.
Because this seems like a glaring fundamental contradiction in the research. 10 minutes ago, you explicitly said niobium prevents transformation by taking up all the nucleation sites and ruining the real estate.
I did say that, yes.
Now you are saying it helps nucleation. Which is it? Does niobium block transformation or accelerate it?
This raises an important question. And it is the exact paradox that makes metallurgical engineering so incredibly complex.
So what's the answer?
The answer is, it does both, but it completely depends on its state of matter. You have to remember the dual identity we talked about.
Ghost versus clump.
Exactly. When niobium is a dissolved liquid ghost, it is segregating to the grain boundaries and altering the energy field. It acts as a bouncer, relaxing the real estate so nothing wants to build there.
Right.
But when you introduce a holding period and allow those atoms to undergo multi-component diffusion and form solid clumps, the cubic F precipitates. The physical environment changes entirely.
How does a solid clump change things?
Those solid niobium carbide particles act as physical seeds within the steel. They provide an actual hard physical building foundation that the ultra-tough bainite can rapidly grow around.
Oh, I see the distinction now. When it is dissolved, it is just an energy field blocking the door.
Right.
But when it becomes a solid crystal, it is a physical rock that the new bainite structure can cling to. It becomes the new real estate itself.
Precisely. The bouncer turns into a cornerstone.
The bouncer turns into a cornerstone. I love that.
And this distinction isn't just, you know, academic trivia for a textbook. It is exactly how modern steelmakers manipulate the cooling process on a massive industrial scale to get the exact microscopic structures they want.
So they are timing it.
Oh, absolutely. By carefully controlling the cooling rate, they control how much niobium stays dissolved as a ghost to block the soft ferrite, and how much is allowed to turn into solid cornerstones to promote the tough bainite.
So what does this all mean? We have been deep in the atomic weeds here, talking about lattices and thermodynamic hills. But this isn't just theoretical physics. Let's look at the physical world around you.
The real world applications are huge.
They really are. This exact high niobium, low carbon trick we just walked through is a literal reason we can build things like the massive Cheyenne Plains X80 steel pipeline.
That pipeline is a perfect example.
By controlling the cooling rate and managing those bouncers and cornerstones, engineers created a pipe that is incredibly strong, yet weldable in the field precisely because of the low carbon content.
And the scale of that application is staggering. Over 6 million tons of this specific high niobium steel are safely in service right now, transporting energy across vast distances under immense pressure.
6 million tons?
Yeah. And the industry isn't stopping with pipelines. They are actively utilizing this exact same metallurgical trick to build lighter, stronger, high-rise skyscrapers.
Because if the steel is stronger at the atomic level, you need less of it to support the building.
Exactly, which changes the entire architecture of a city.
6 million tons of steel, all relying on a fractional percentage of niobium acting as microscopic bouncers.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it reminds us that true engineering power comes from deep, fundamental understanding.
It's all about the details.
It really is. By mathematically modeling the three-legged race of multi-component diffusion, by mapping the precise curvature effects of capillarity, and by measuring the literal energy of a grain boundary down to 0.076 joules per square meter, scientists and engineers aren't just guessing anymore.
We aren't just melting rocks and hoping for the best.
No, we can dial in the exact traits we want in a metal. We can command the atoms to dance to our precise choreography.
It is breathtaking when you really step back and look at the chain of events. We start by moving mountains of dirt in Brazil just to extract 3% of a rare oxide.
We strip it, refine it,
and drop a microscopic pinch of it into a vat of molten iron. And because we understand exactly how that atom acts as a ghost to block energy and how it acts as a rock to build foundations, we can build pipelines that span continents and towers that scrape the sky.
It's pretty magical.
So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over today as you go about your routine. If human beings can manipulate the literal energy of microscopic grain boundaries just by adding a fraction of a percent of enriched Brazilian dirt to a vat of molten iron, well, what other hidden atomic levers exist in the materials surrounding you right now?
There's a lot we still don't see.
The next time you walk past a towering high-rise skyscraper or drive over a massive steel pipeline, realize that it is standing tall not just because of brute force or sheer mass. It is holding together because of a microscopic magic trick, carefully choreographed at the scale of a single atom. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.